Welcome to Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. I'm Stella Fong. In this show, we have another bugalicious experience as we go to the Cowboy Cricket Farms in Belgrade, Montana. Right under the flight path of the Bozeman-Yellowstone International Airport is the facility where James and Kathy Rowland run their manufacturing of cricket products. Until recently, they raised the crickets that go into their cricket powder, cowboy chirp cookies, and whole roasted crickets. Now, they source from off-site cricket farmers from around the country. By the way, their logo is a rodeo cowboy riding a cricket, hanging onto its antennae with one hand, and in the other, his hat in the air. James Rowland will be talking to us, telling us about their business, and providing some history on how their bug business started. But let's begin with what we are most familiar with, the chirping sound of a cricket. Only the male cricket can chirp. They have a file and scraper body part on their wings that makes the chirping noise. Crickets have different chirping sounds for different reasons. Mostly, the males make songs to attract females. Crickets are in the family of jumping insects and can vary in size from 0.12 to 2 inches long. They have thin antennae, hind legs for jumping, three jointed tarsal foot segments with two abdominal appendages. They have two stiff forewings and then two long membranous hind wings for flying. We learned about eating insects from Dr. Florence Dunkel from her bug cook-off last year at Montana State University Bozeman. In that show, we met one of the biggest cheerleaders for putting bugs in our diets. She spoke of nutritional and ecological benefits of eating insects, from their high protein content to their small carbon footprint. Now come with me as we step into the production facility of Cowboy Cricket Farms. We enter into a large foyer with a storage room to the left and a large kitchen in front of us. Here to greet us is marketing manager James Rowland.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad to have you guys here, and I'm happy to show you around. Most of it now is just a production facility, as most of our farming is done off-site, but we do have some crickets for you to see today as well.
All right, fantastic. Let's get started.
So we're coming through the entryway here where we have our dry storage. So this is our dry storage facility. We have all of our ingredients in here. Any ready-to-go product is stored on the shelf. We've been getting a lot of new equipment in lately, including our new packaging devices. So we're really expanding quite a bit here. This place is getting very full very quickly. It was empty just a few months ago.
Well, this looks like a mobile unit in some ways because the shelves are all on rollers and it looks like you can just move things around and just reset this place according to what your needs are.
Absolutely. And we've been doing changes here almost weekly for the last year and a half. We're finally starting to get settled into place.
We now step back into the foyer to move ahead to a large room with stainless steel tables and numerous pieces of food processing equipment.
So moving out here to the rest of the kitchen facility, this is where we actually bring in the crickets into the freezer, and then they are put over to the dehydrator here. And that dehydrator is how we actually process them to make them a safe, ready-to-eat food.
And how do the crickets arrive at the facility?
So our farmers tend to ship them to us already frozen and harvested, but we keep them in the freezer until we're ready to process them. We do have some farmers that send them already dehydrated. They have their own commercial kitchen facilities, and then we just do the further processing after that.
We now step into the freezer, perhaps one of the most important pieces of equipment in the room.
So this is a 10 by 10 by 8 foot freezer. So it does have a good amount of space, but we fill it up fast. I have a small harvest of crickets here. This is just a tiny fraction of what we would normally receive, but it gives you a good idea. And you're also able to see the differences between the males and the females pretty easily.
And how do you tell the difference?
The females are larger and they have this ovipositor, a little stick coming off of her backside. That's how she lays her eggs.
And what is the size of a cricket? Those look like they were about, what, an inch and a half long or a couple inches long?
Yeah, they're about an inch and a half long, depending on age and sex. Our crickets are a little bit larger than average, especially in actual mass. They're somewhere around half a gram a piece.
And how old is a cricket when they get to that size?
Their full life cycle is only about 7 to 8 weeks.
From the freezer, the crickets go into their next stage of processing.
So this is our dehydrator that we use to process the crickets. They go in there for about 8 to 10 hours. We cook them low and slow. Most of our competitors bring them up to about 400 degrees for 30 minutes or so. By dehydrating them, we can keep the nutrition levels really high, and we can also keep the flavor up there and change the texture. So instead of falling apart in your mouth like dust, it's more like eating a potato chip. They have a nice crisp to them.
When it comes to eating insects, it is so psychological, as many of us eat meat which comes from an animal. Then more of us love potato chips, and when James describes them to have the crunch of a potato chip, how can we resist? The crickets from Cowboy Cricket Farms do come in different enticing flavors.
We have 5 different flavors of whole crickets. Original, which is just plain. Smoky Jumper, which is like a barbecue, mesquite, wasabi, cinnamon, and tropical, which is mango chili.
So how do the crickets get their flavoring? And what other ways are crickets made available for eating?
After they get done with the dehydrator, they're either flavored or they're milled down into a powder. And so that's our little grain mill over there. We can run about 600 pounds of powder a day at capacity, though usually we don't have that much to process here any given day.
How much do you process on a given day?
There's a lot of volatility. It really depends on what our demand is. We try to schedule a couple months out, but that can be difficult. So today I'm not doing anything. A few days ago I did about 100 pounds. It really depends on what the market needs at that time.
I know your product's available via mail order. Do you have retail suppliers?
You can find our product around town in Bozeman, a few other places in Montana. But outside of the area, we're available in Mom's Organics and also on our website, cowboycrickets.com, and on Amazon.
So you spoke of nutrition. What are you trying to maintain and keep in the dehydration process?
You see, if we go above 180 degrees Fahrenheit, we start denaturing the proteins and the lipids. So if we're going to keep the good fats in there and the good protein, we have to keep that temperature low. And that's why we stay below 180 degrees, but we still want a safe food product. Since the FDA has never created any kind of safety guidelines for edible insects, we have to adopt other safety guidelines. So we've chosen poultry because it has the highest cooking temperature standards at 165 degrees. So between 165 and 180 is what we're shooting for.
Well, is the FDA starting to look at this a little bit more seriously and looking at setting standards for you to follow? Are you part of initiating some of those rules?
So our company's been helping to create those standards. Right now, there are no federal guidelines. The FDA says as long as it's a safe and clean food source, then it's fine. At some point, though, we would love to see official standards because it reduces the overall risk in the industry. Even if we do everything right, one of our competitors may not, and that can put a really bad taste in someone's mouth if they've heard that there's a dangerous food product out there simply because another manufacturer isn't doing things correctly.
So along with the dehydrator and the coffee roaster, we're in this room, and I think it's what, like 20 by 20 feet? And there are stainless steel tables and racks. From the very beginning, you had talked about cricket flour. That's how you began. But you also started with those Cowboy Chirp chocolate cookies. Tell me about those.
So our chocolate chirp cookies are definitely what we're best known for. We've found that if you give someone a whole roasted cricket, they probably won't eat it. If you give them the powder, they don't really know what to do with it. But if you give them a delicious chocolate chirp cookie, suddenly it all makes sense. People love chocolate chip cookies. And we started with them as a way to just kind of communicate with the consumer. It wasn't a product we were selling. Instead, we would donate it to people and different auctions to help their organizations. But every time we did that, all the product got stolen before the auction happened. So we figured, well, if people are willing to steal it, maybe they'll buy it. And as it turns out, they will. And so that's our best-selling product by far.
Well, this idea came from your wife, who was a student at Montana State University, Bozeman. And how did she start this company?
Kathy started the company. We've been partners in it since the beginning. And she got the idea from the Bug Buffet at MSU, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's just a big celebration about a week long about edible insects and entomophagy. And it all culminates in this luncheon that's free and open to the public. Last year, we had about 3,000 people show up. So it's a huge event that we're still getting a lot of information out there about. She came back to me with the idea and said, we need to open up a cricket farm. I said, no, this is a horrible, horrible idea. We are not doing this. But as usual, she was right, I was wrong. And so 2.5 years later, here we are.
Your advocate there is Dr. Florence Dunkel, who I've had the pleasure to meet, that is definitely someone who's in favor of eating insects and having it as part of our diet.
Yes, Dr. Dunkel really is one of the absolute leaders in this industry. Without her, we wouldn't have a company. And without her, we never would have even found out about this. She is an absolutely amazing person, has done a lot for edible insects and many other sectors in agriculture.
As James shared with us earlier, he is not processing crickets today.
So one of the other things we do with our facility here is we rent out kitchen space. Our processes here are so efficient that we could operate in a tiny kitchen, but we've been able to give other food entrepreneurs in the area an opportunity to build and grow their businesses by using our facility.
On this day, we find two people cooking in the kitchen.
Yes, this is actually one of our clients. They are renting out the kitchen space. They're here 7 to 3 every day. We have several other clients who use the space. And so they're making tamales and all sorts of other awesome, wonderful dishes here.
Well, it's great that you're using this for a multi-purpose use and bringing the community in here, aside from doing what you're doing. So the space doesn't just go stagnant when you're not producing in here.
I agree. It was really sad to just see it sitting here. Like I said, our process is so efficient. We don't need very much time or space, but the cost to make a small kitchen versus this much larger 1,200 square foot kitchen is marginal. It's maybe $20,000 in difference. So we might as well make the larger one. And what we found is there is this big need in Gallatin County for commercial kitchen space, but there's not much available. So we're actually working on creating a larger facility in the next couple years as well.
From the downstairs production area, we will head upstairs to the Cowboy Cricket Farm's office and research area in the second part of Flavors Under the Big Sky. Welcome back to the second part of Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. We go back to Cowboy Cricket Farms in Belgrade, just outside Bozeman, and join James Rowland. We enter the office area, which is not only a place for business with the usual desks and chairs, but there is also a small kitchen and a play area. Owners Kathy and James Rowland are parents to Elise 9, Olive 7, and Liam 5. In the office, we meet up with partner and graphic designer Cree Gullings.
Well, let's meet Cree. How are you changing things so that you can make the packaging more welcoming for the consumer?
Some big steps I'm taking on making sure that packaging is more approachable to the consumer is by using the fun names, the fun puns we're creating in the company, like Chocolate Chirp Cookie, and putting that big on the front of the packaging so it kind of catches people's eyes. Like, they see Chocolate Chirp Cookie, and it's a lot different. It's just that little kind of quirky little attitude towards it that makes it that much more intriguing and interesting to approach. We also took the packaging from a simple plastic bag into using a compostable craft material, so it's a lot more on brand with our company's ethics as well. We're just working on making sure we're using more consistent colors so you can recognize us better. We're kind of sticking with that craft natural kind of look because it fits with our brand of trying to make sure we're being more ethical and responsible towards the environment. And so we're just making sure that our brand is representing and echoing our ethics and our morals and the reason for starting our company.
As Cree continues to design packaging that reflects the intent of Cowboy Cricket Farms while establishing brand recognition, I wonder how many packages with the logo of a cowboy riding a cricket, hanging onto his antennae in one hand and waving his hat in the other, went out to consumers. James shares.
Last year, we did about 1,000 orders. That was our first year of actual production. This year, we're hoping to do several times more than that. I think we're probably going to do around 5,000 to 10,000 and then just keep growing from there.
The recent changes at Cowboy Cricket Farms include outsourcing the raising of crickets to farmers in Montana and surrounds. This facility does all the research and production.
When we first started the company, it was just as a cricket farm. And we were actually just across the parking lot. You can actually see it right outside the window there where our building was. And we had nothing but racks and racks of crickets all the way to the ceiling. When we moved over to this facility so we could have our own commercial kitchen, we ended up having to combine the facilities, which obviously we couldn't fit two facilities of equal size into one. So we reduced it down to this 20 by 20 room that we have just off to the side here, which is where we kept the crickets. But now our partner farmers produce almost everything that we make as far as the actual raw ingredient of the insects. So here we do the research, we do the product manufacturing, and have our actual office space. But very, very little of the production of the insects is done here now.
So let's step back to 2016. When you had the crickets, what did you need to start your farm? Do you buy a pair of crickets or you buy a group of crickets? Take us through some of the basics of how one does raise crickets.
We started with just 20,000 crickets, which sounds like a lot, but really is not. That's just a few bins worth. And we grew that to over 2 million crickets over the course of a year. We did it very inefficiently, unfortunately. We learned a lot. But because of that, we've been able to teach others. We've had probably about 100 students come through here and learn how to farm crickets. We have a YouTube channel that we show people how to farm them on as well. But when we were at that facility, it was a day-to-day thing. You know, it's an 8-week life cycle, and you have to be there almost every day. It's agriculture, just like any other type of farming. It takes a lot of work.
Of course, the most important part of raising crickets is they need to be fed.
So we have an in-house feed that we created off of a grant from the Montana Department of Commerce through their MBRCT program, which unfortunately did not get funding this year, so there's no more MBRCT program. But we were able to take advantage of it when it was there and develop this corn-free and soy-free feed that really has allowed us to create a really healthy, incredibly nutritious cricket.
If you were to describe the taste of a cricket, how would you describe it?
They're somewhere between a sunflower seed and a potato chip, both in flavor and in texture.
In the beginning, Cowboy Cricket Farms sold their sunflower seed and potato chip flavored crickets as powder. So what does one do with cricket powder?
So the cricket powder is really multifunctional. You can use it in just about anything. What it's best known for is substituting part of the flour out of baked goods, but you can put it into shakes and smoothies. We have hospitals that use it for wound care patients, and they use it to get that extra protein and iron into their diet, which otherwise they have to use Ensure shakes that get really old after a while. But you can use the cricket powder in cheese sauces, on salads and sandwiches and breads, and really anything you can put a powder in. So you can get this extra nutrition really easily.
How do you convince people that they need to put crickets in their diet?
The biggest thing that we tell people and the thing that they really identify with is the nutrition side and then the environmental impact side. So environmentally, compared to beef, pound for pound, we are in Montana after all, we use 2,060 times less water per pound, 14 times less feed, produce 80 times less methane, and do all of that using less than 1% of the comparable landmass. Nutritionally, again, pound for pound compared to beef, we have twice as much protein, twice as much iron, and 43 times as much omega-3, which means we can use fewer resources and feed more people all around the planet. It's a really exciting thing, and once we get this process down efficiently, it'll also be more affordable than almost any other form of protein out there.
So we step out of the office on the second floor of Cowboy Cricket Farms and move across the hallway. We open the door to enter into a room that is lit comfortably with fluorescent lights. There are small stacks of lidded plastic containers that we would find in our closets for storage. The moment we come in, the room goes silent, absent of any chirping. But as though recognizing James's presence, the chirps resume.
So this is essentially what you would see in a much larger farm. There would just be a lot more of it. We only have about 10 bins going right now. They're all 20-gallon storage totes. So we can only hold a few thousand crickets in here at about 2,000 to 3,000 crickets per bin, although none of them have that. We've been using this area for some studies and experimentation that we're doing right now. What you typically see is a vertical setup. The higher you can go, the less land you need. And so you'd have shelves all the way from floor to ceiling, just stacked with bins or boxes or vats full of crickets. In each one of them, you'll see that there's these egg cartons. They use the egg cartons to increase surface area, and so that's really where they live. And then in our case here, we have such a small farm that we still use the vegetable cellulose sponges for water. We use those because they're technically edible, so we don't have to worry about them eating plastic sponges. You also see their little trays of feed in there. And then at the very bottom of the tray, you'll see this kind of salt and peppery looking stuff, and that's a cricket frass, cricket poop. So we sell that as fertilizer. Not only does it have a decent NPK value for plants, but even more importantly, it increases secondary metabolism, which means that your tomatoes get more flavor and your basil smells better. And if you're a pot farmer, then you have more THC, which is why most of that goes to that industry.
It intrigues me that the egg cartons create the condo living space for crickets. The compartments of the cartons give the crickets some separation from each other, providing some privacy. The walls of the cartons also give the crickets a sense of security.
I can show you a tray that actually has hatched eggs, and you can see just how many there are.
Okay. And do you have these egg cartons specially made, or they have to be a certain type?
No, okay. They're just regular cardboard pulp egg cartons. So you can see in this tray here, this is from one of our farms that brought it over just for us to have as a sample. They had about 60,000 eggs in here. Every one of those little tiny white grain of rice looking things is an egg. And they form about a quarter inch or so under the dirt. It takes 11 days for them to hatch. When they do, they come out as what we call pinheads. We call them that because they look like tiny little dots, like pinhead dots on a piece of paper. And then they go through a total of 7 instars. That's every time that they shed. So over the course of their lifespan, which is about 7 to 8 weeks, they shed several times. That last one is when they're finally sexually mature and we can truly tell the difference between the males and the females. The males are the ones who chirp, and the females are larger and have the ovipositor, which is how they lay their eggs.
How many eggs does a female cricket lay, approximately?
About 14 per day.
Oh, all right. And they will lay eggs daily, or is there a certain period of time that they actually just like over a 2-week period or over a certain time?
You can breed them for about 2 to 3 weeks, but once you have a farm at capacity, generally you only do it for 1 or 2 days. That way you can harvest the bin efficiently.
And then when the cricket emerges, do they emerge as crickets or do they come into like a pupa form?
So that's a great question. Crickets do not have a pupa or larva phase. When they hatch as pinheads, if you look at them under a magnifying glass, they just look like tiny little crickets. And they just keep getting bigger and bigger with every shed, with every instar.
What is a cricket predator in nature?
Everything. Okay. They cannot defend themselves in any way. That's why you may have noticed when we came into the farm, everything got really quiet. Movement, light, and sound tells them they need to go hide. And so since they can't bite, they can't sting, they're not poisonous or venomous, all they can do is hide. And so that's what they do. Everything eats them.
So tell me a little bit, you did mention courses that you're giving now, and that's something that you are providing for the community. Tell me how long they are and what's involved with all that.
We started off giving 1-day courses, but we found that it was a bit of a fire hose effect. People couldn't really absorb all the information that took us a year and a half to come up with. So we've now extended that to a 5-day course. Every now and then we'll bring it down to 3 much longer days if absolutely necessary. And it covers absolutely everything. We teach them how to farm crickets, how to harvest the crickets, how to raise them, the business side of it, the legal side, what you have to look out for, everything that we've learned. We even teach them how all of our processing works, all of our recipes. And the reason that we do that is if we're going to work with this person, we want them to understand everything that we do. So when we say, hey, this cricket is not up to par, this is not what we've agreed to buy, they know exactly why and exactly how we're going to use it. Also, we're a very transparent company. We put all of our recipes out there anyways. so that the consumer really understands what they're buying and where their food's coming from.
Where are your farmers now that are providing the source for your crickets?
We have farmers in Montana, Idaho, Oregon, Pennsylvania, and we're starting in Canada and Mexico as well.
And then you said that they arrive frozen, so the UPS truck or FedEx can just bring this product to you.
They can, though typically our farmers will send about half a ton to a ton at a time, and so they ship it via frozen truck, just like you would ice cream to a grocery store. We have very strict requirements in place for what temperatures they have to be and making sure that we get a safe food product.
These days, James and Kathy have been very creative in their marketing. Their ingenuity started from the beginning when they used Kickstarter for initial funding, was the 2018 SCORE Award winner for outstanding military-owned small businesses, and have produced numerous YouTube videos.
We've had some very creative funding. So while many other large companies in our industry have relied on venture capitalists, we haven't really gone that route. We haven't had bank loans. We have financed the company through business plan awards, through grants, and through actual sales, which is the best kind of funding there is. But we've definitely had some really awesome stuff. We've won the John Raffetto competition, which is the largest business plan competition in Montana. We've won the Veteran Shark Tank competition in December, which was a $25,000 prize. We did do a small public offering just in Montana, raised about $35,000 that way. But again, sales is really the best thing that we have going for us. People like our products. If they buy it, we still have money to operate.
Before we end Flavors Under the Big Sky, I brought summer intern Caitlin Nicholas into the studio to sample a chocolate chirp cookie with me. During the time she has been at YPR, she has helped put together a new show called The Weekender, where flavor moments will be one of the segments in this half-hour show. Caitlin went out with me to tape several of the flavor moments to come. Here's Caitlin sampling some bites with me. All right, I've opened up the package, and Caitlin Nicholas is here in the studio with me as she is interning for Yellowstone Public Radio this summer from NYU. So thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Stella.
It's been so much fun because Caitlin's been instrumental in resurrecting flavor moments. I, from Cowboy Cricket Farms, have a chocolate chirp cookie. And since she's been going around and tasting with me for flavor moments, I thought it was just more than apropos that she's in here tasting these cookies with me. So here we go.
Okay.
I'm going to give you a cookie here.
Great. All right. Okay.
Well, and what happened is I handed Caitlin a cookie, you know, over to the other side of the microphones, and they're crumbly. You can see that there's
really
just
crumbly.
Soft and crumbly, and the cookie itself is perfectly round. It's got this earthy brown color in it, and when you look at the cookie, you see the chocolate chips.
Yep, yep.
And the brown is kind of like a maple brown.
I would say so. Yeah, it's a little darker than what I would think of for some chocolate chip cookies, but it feels very soft. Like, it doesn't feel overdone at all.
No, it isn't. So let's just take a bite.
Okay.
And they do. They just crumble in your mouth. Mm-hmm. You know, they fall into your mouth. Just super easy to eat. You taste light kind of vanilla-y chocolate taste.
Mm-hmm.
And you can bite into their small bites of just chocolate chips.
Yeah, it's a really light taste in the sense of, like, just... It's not too chewy.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it kind of like melts in your mouth a little bit.
If it didn't have a logo of a cowboy riding a cricket, or it wasn't named Cowboy Chirp Cookie, we wouldn't think about it if these were just on a plate somewhere.
No, I would have no idea. I feel like the flavor isn't different than a chocolate chip cookie. It's mostly just the texture, I think.
Yes.
I would have expected it to be crunchy.
Right.
And it's not crunchy at all. It's like really soft. You almost don't have to swallow.
I think this would be like perfect with a warm glass of milk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Well, thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Many thanks to James Rowland of Cricket Cowboy Farms for making the world more buckalicious. My gratitude to Ken Siebert for his production help. Theme music has been provided by Parker Brown. Additional funding has been provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communications on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanians. Thanks to you, listeners, for your support. I'm Stella Fong.